Thanks for flying Southwest, and we hope to see you back real soon.
Very, very, very happy that the best sport in the world is back in season.
Feels good every time. Every spin, I scream louder.
Brian, I know we're all football guys and football guys, guys.
Yeah, I'm a football guy.
Jordan dropped Marcus last week, so.
Oh, God, Jordan!
I have a lot to say about this.
So this is the best time of the year for us?
Psych!
Welcome to Semi Products Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host and commissioner, Rick, here tonight with my thoughts. Here for week 14 of the fantasy football season. And it's just me tonight, so we'll be keeping this one pretty quick. I'm expecting, under 3.5 hours. Three and a half would be a good time for him to get on out of here and get you guys on your way to talk about the playoffs and how things are going in the Semi-Products Fantasy Football League. Come to you reporting live from the second half of the Thursday night football game. Jordan Love just throwing a touchdown pass to cut the lead to 17-13, extra point pending. That's Tucker Kraft making, or well, I guess just Kraft making the catch. I don't know. Tucker Craycraft, I think he plays for the Dolphins, played for the Dolphins. Anyways, it's a touchdown for Jordan Love in the Packers. Anyways, yeah, just me tonight. So here we go. I guess we'll start with the Ducks. Been talking about them a little bit. They are taking on Penn State, Big Ten Championship game on Saturday evening. 5 o'clock, I believe, is the kickoff time, or at least the scheduled time on CBS. That'll be fun. Get Uncle Vern and Uncle Gary calling that one for us. I'm honestly just kind of glad that it's not Gus on and Joel Klatt on the Fox team. Really haven't been super pumped with how they've gone so far. They just, I don't know. Gus has kind of lost it for me. I think he's called too many Ohio State games. And he's really like actively rooting for them. And then when they don't do well, it really shows, like, not in a way when previously, like, Al Michaels calling a game, like, oh, you'd be able to kind of know who he bet on based on how he's calling the game and the result. Maybe he had an under, he's excited by the defense, or he's gotten over, there's no offense, he's upset or something like that. You can kind of tell. With Gus, it's just kind of like, oh, here's an Ohio State fan who's calling this game. And it's less fun. He doesn't have that kind of burst of energy, and now when you kind of hear it, it feels fake, and I don't know, there's no Maserati Marv or anything going on to make things interesting. Still very funny Ohio State lost to Michigan. I think that cannot kind of go unmentioned here. Ohio State did lose to Michigan. It is very funny that it happened again for the fourth year in a row. Ryan Day has 5 losses in Big Ten play while he's been head coach at Ohio State. One of them was this year to Oregon, and the other 4 are to Michigan, and the other 4 have gone 4 years in a row to Michigan. I think that kind of says a lot about that game and how you coach and prepare for it. And I don't know if he's going to get fired or not, because again, you lose 5 conference games over what, 6 years or something like that, that he's 5-6 years he's been at Ohio State, and like those are the only conference games that he's lost, and he only loses the big game, literally the big game. So very interesting. I don't know if they'd fire him because he is that good of a coach, but we'll see. I think it'd be very funny if they did, because he seems to have lost the plot a little bit with the way the end of that game ended and everything. Just kind of didn't have it. So, Oregon, Penn State, Oregon's 3.5-point favorite, and the over-under, according to ESPN Bet, is 50.5. Again, that one at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana. I don't know. 1-3, another top 5 matchup for Oregon. Neutral site game. I'm not sure how many Duck fans are going to be going to that one versus Penn State fans and how easy it is to get around, what the vibes are going to be like. Tickets right now are as low as $20 to get in. So if you are maybe within driving distance of Indiana or Indianapolis and you'd like to get there, you'd be sitting in the 600 level for $20. It looks like tickets in the lower bowl are about 200-ish here or there. Couple seats maybe in the end zone you can get in. Yeah, right behind the end zone for $81, $70. Not too bad, I guess, depending on the row and stuff like that. So we shall see what the turnout is like for that game. Don't know a lot about Penn State other than James Franklin is another coach who always loses the big game. So I think that kind of, to me, shows where Penn State is in terms of a marquee program compared to Ohio State. If Ryan Day loses to you, you're a big-time program. And if Ryan Day is always beating Penn State, I think that obviously puts Penn State in the tier below. And then James Franklin kind of always losing the big game puts them definitely in a tier below. So I think that kind of locks them in. I mean, everybody has been saying since the 12-team playoff that Penn State was destined to be the first team to lose an at-home playoff game. It was like them or Notre Dame, I think, were kind of the big jokes because they were kind of guaranteed to be in that 5-6 range where they are right now. So we shall see how that one goes. But it wouldn't be very surprising to see Oregon continue to win. It's kind of all they've done. Lanning's just an incredible motivator, and he's going to be able to motivate the hell out of a defense that, pardon my French, Brandon, it fucks. This defense fucking rocks, and it doesn't have, according to the media or the coaches, one of the two, does not have any first team all Big Ten defensive players. So Dan Lanning is going to be able to say you walked into a new conference, you beat Ohio State and Michigan, which hasn't been done in the conference, or one team beating both of them in the same season since like the late 90s or the 80s, whenever, early 2000s, something like that. Doesn't happen very often. New school in the conference showing up with the schedule that they had, dominating the way that they've done, undefeated going into the Big Ten championship game, and then being able to say, yeah, the people who theoretically should have been watching you all year weren't, and they don't believe in you. So let's go out and prove something today. And that would be very nice to see, because this defense is really fucking good. Penn State's got that tight end guy. I think there was like a moment where everybody was like, oh, this tight end should be in the Heisman conversation. And then everybody kind of caught their breath and was like, no, I don't think they really, he should be. Let's see if we go to the page here. Do we get any stats? Yeah, Tyler Warren, 978 receiving yards, is your big tight end. Drew Aller's only thrown for 2,600 yards. And then rushing wise, it looks like it's a two-headed approach. Sickles Ningleton has rushed for 733 yards, leads the team. And then a Katrin Allen, 698. So two-headed approach, no 1,000-yard rusher on the year, unlike Oregon. I think we've said it before. Just give Jordan James the ball, and we really don't need a whole lot of Whittington carries on Saturday. Kind of kills the offense a little bit. The ESPN analytics matchup projector also has now grown into Penn State's favor. It's now 53.7% chance for Penn State to win. So I guess it's just more of a motivational tool. I don't know why. What analytics you're feeding a computer where the number one undefeated team in the country with a quarterback as good who's been doing as well as Dylan Gabriel's had, defense is as good as it is in favor to win this game, even though Oregon is a 3.5-point favorite according to ESPN bet. So I don't know if that's people saying, I don't know if they're messing with their own numbers of the matchup predictors saying, oh, Penn State's going to win, so you should bet on them, and then they lose and they keep the money. I don't know. It gets a little tricky to me. And then looking at the playoff, I guess, and the rest of the weekend, conference championship games start, well, I guess depending on when you listen to this, on Friday evening. The big one is UNLV at Boise State. So the first of the conference playoff, I guess, potential playoff spots would be locked up if number 10 Boise State does win. They will have a home game in the Mountain West Conference Championship game. Boise's a 4-point favorite. They've already played UNLV this season, so that'll be interesting to see how that one goes. And then Boise ranked 10th, but would get the fourth seed as one of the highest ranked. I guess they'd be ranked higher than who is getting the Big 12 champion, which is right now theoretically Arizona State, who's just one spot ahead of Iowa State. SEC championship game will be going on. We'll have finished as Oregon kicks off. So Georgia and Texas, a rematch of that one, playing Texas, or Texas playing Georgia at the neutral site in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Georgia. We all know what it's like to play Georgia in Atlanta. So that will not be an easy game. I guess as close as you can get to those two teams playing like a home and home. That line, Texas 2.5-point favorites in that one. Georgia did not play very well against Georgia Tech, and one of the more fun overtime games I think I've ever seen, for it to be a rivalry game and to be that kind of silly and dumb of an ending was pretty funny. So we'll see how that one goes as well. And then your other teams that aren't playing this weekend: Ohio State, Tennessee, Indiana, Notre Dame, Alabama are all of the others who will be sitting by idly watching the chaos happen ahead of them. And then same time as Oregon, Penn State is Clemson, SMU, the ACC championship game. I think the only thing that would cause possibly even more chaos and add a bigger wrinkle into the playoff rankings would be Clemson winning, because they would, I guess they would move up, but would they pass Arizona State and then take the 4 seed? Potentially, I guess if Iowa State and Arizona State, I think, are both kind of kept in a spot where they're going to win the conference and get one of their guaranteed spots, but likely going to be the 12 seed because they're ranked so low. If Boise State loses, UNLV isn't going to take that top spot. I think that's maybe the only chance. Well, how far does Boise State drop with a second loss? They're not going to want to put a two-loss Mountain West runner-up into the playoff. I guess that one might be Miami's only hope of getting in. The rankings are very kind of sticky and messy. It's doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of why teams are ranked where. Of course, Alabama's still involved, and it's half, is this merit-based? It's half, do they actually deserve to be ranked where they are? It's very messy. The automatic buys are kind of messing with thing and teams getting left out, because they are, if it was just the top 12, they would be the 12th team in, but automatic conference buys jumping up and moving around is really kind of messing with the seating and the procedures here. So I don't know. I would like to not have Alabama involved, just because it seems like they're involved because they are Alabama. At the same time, Miami has just kind of been playing with fire the whole year, and it was just a matter of time that they lost. Like, if you look back at the rankings, like, it was just kind of, okay, you're undefeated, but we're not ranking you as the second best team in the country because we know you're not that good. we kind of realize you should have lost maybe a game or two by now already, and kind of we should put you aside. So them finally losing a second game, I think, really gave the committee the opportunity to say, we don't have to put them in. We haven't liked how they've played all year. Kind of comparative records and schedules and wins versus other ranked teams, it gets very tricky. Just, I don't know, don't kick a field goal down seven after you've blown a 21-point lead on the road and hope that your defense that's sucked the entire second half will suddenly make a stop. Like, give the ball to the quarterback that you want to win the Heisman and have them go try and win the game. That's just dumb Mario Cristobal football. The analytics will say something different, and maybe they should have gone for it. I don't know, but it's the game that Oregon's lost before under Mario, and they've watched Miami lose before the last couple of years as well. So it's just kind of, I don't know, it's not a surprise to see it happen, I should say. Other than just upsetting that, of course, Alabama's involved, and that's going to be dumb. So my other gripe is that I think the Ohio State loss to Michigan was so bad that they shouldn't be given a home game. So I think having them ranked just ahead of Tennessee is a little frustrating, because I don't think Ohio State deserves to have that game. Other than the fact that it's going to be fun to root for Tennessee to beat Ohio State, as that would be the team that Oregon likely plays if they do win the Big Ten championship game. And this is all without getting into the talk about if Oregon, should they lose the Big Ten championship game to get the 5 seed so that they play the lesser of the Big 12 champions that's going to be the 12 seed, and then they get Boise again, you know, at a neutral site, because that's the path in the bracket. I don't know. I don't want to play that game because, I mean, the Big 12 championship game will have happened. Yes, the Big 12 championship game is Big Nude kickoff at 9. So I guess you'll kind of know who's going to be locked up into that 12 spot. And then maybe at the end of the Big 10 championship game, you feel a little bit better about what's going on. But then you've got the Clemson of it all could fuck it up too. So it's all very strange. I would like Oregon to win. I think it's a fairly mild take to say that we all would want Oregon to win as the team that we root and watch for, that we think that would be best. So let's just do that. Root for Oregon, then. That'll be more fun. Just keep winning. It's a very good thing, winning football games. Anyways, sound off in the comments here about what you think about the college football playoff rankings, Big Ten championship game. Would love to hear from you guys. Good stuff. Good stuff, guys. Great takes. Really love to hear it. Packers up 21-17. Jared Goff threw a little bit of a bad interception. Other big news, the Club World Cup has finalized the 32 teams that are going to be playing in that competition. I don't know anything about it. We don't know where Juan Soto's going to sign. The Chicago Blackhawks fired their head coach. And then F1, it's the last weekend of the season in Abu Dhabi. Lewis Hamilton's last race for Mercedes. Carlos Sainz's last race with Ferrari, as Sir Dick Ham is going to be going to Ferrari to take Carlos Sainz's spot. And then there's the whole debacle going on with Max Verstappen and George Russell. They don't like each other because George is like, hey, this guy's like Max is just kind of a prissy little whiner who wants everything given to him. And then he acts like the victim in front of the cameras. And then Max is like, yeah, well, George said a swear word behind the scenes. And then George was like, yeah. And then Max said he was going to put my fucking head in the wall, which when you're racing and driving cars at 200 miles an hour, like, more than putting your head in the wall, like, that is kind of like threatening murder. It's not very nice. But Max isn't nice, and he's kind of a prissy baby. But George is also like the classic hoity-toity royal family British guy type. And it's like, would really, you know, don't love my ally here. Might want this coming from somebody else. Might be a little bit better. Anyways, I think that's it for other sports. Oh, Oregon Ducks basketball keeps winning. That's pretty neat. They're ranked 12th, undefeated. Big Ten conference play has started. It feels like very soon. Does conference basketball always start in December? I feel like that was more of a January thing. Is the Big Ten too big that they have to start it sooner? I don't know. I've watched like 20 minutes of an Oregon basketball game. They have a center who looks like he is some sort of accountant who is cosplaying as a 90s middle reliever, like a baseball middle reliever out of the 90s. I think it's Shellstad. Anyways, I don't know. Ducks Hooper doing well. And they, the classic at USC home against UCLA weekend set out of the Big Ten for them. So that's Sunday afternoon in the middle of your football Sunday. We'll be seeing that one. So yeah, go Ducks. Keep winning. That's way more fun that way. So that's about that. Let's get to the matchups and the league. As we go to the standings and things have cleared up right now, east of Teton, Scott is the number one team in the league at 10-3. He has caught Andrew and clinched a bye. Andrew is 10-3. He has clinched a playoff spot in a bye. Scott on points four, being the second highest scoring team in the league, overtakes Andrew, who is in the bottom half of scoring. He is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, is seventh in the league in scoring. So Scott continues his big tear up the rankings, gets a bye. Is this going to be, I don't know if we have on the semi-products reference, if bye week clinches are listed, that might be a thing. Let's go over to look at Scott's team. Scott has finished first in 2016, 2020. So this will be his third bye and potentially third time in first place as well. The last two times Scott was first, he was a finalist in 2016, lost to Duncan, and then in 2020 lost in the semifinals. Other teams in the playoff include Tim, and that's it. Tim has clinched his spot in the playoffs, leaving Brandon, Bobby Dix, Luke, Kittlehouse on the Prairie, Fronik, A Tale of Two CDs, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Johnny U, that's Jordan, and Dan, Quinn, Hote, myself, have all been eliminated. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4 teams competing for three spots. Mike and Jared and Duncan are all 7-6. And then there is Pip, who is 6-7, who has renamed his team as The Burrow. Is that his full team name? I don't know. I'm going to have to look that up later. Pip is at 6-7, outside looking in. So we'll have to be doing some math based on the schedule and who everybody is playing to see what he needs to make the playoffs. In terms of points, Pip is ahead of Duncan in points scored by, 15-17 to 14-13. So that's just about 100. So Duncan does, if Duncan loses, he'd still have to, well, no. Yeah. So it's, if Mike, Jared, or Duncan all win, they're in. And if Pip wins, he does have, and he needs, he's got the points on Duncan, and Pip is also, but he is behind Jared by, oh no, sorry. That's Jared who has a 100-point lead on Duncan. Pip is at 1495 to 1413, so that's about 80 points. And then he's behind Mike by many. Mike's the highest scoring team in the league right now. I think it's pretty safe to say that he's going to get in just based on points scored. Yeah, ESPN's Watson has him as a 99% chance that he'll make the playoffs at either 8-6 or 7-7, just being the highest scoring team in the league will definitely help him out with that. Jared's kind of in the same boat. He does have a 17-22-point lead on Pip. So I guess if Pip wins and Jared loses and Pip outscores Jared by 22-23, if my math is correct, Pip gets in, and then Duncan needs a win to get in because he is behind on points by about 80. So that makes his path in a little bit harder, but he does have the advantage that he's got the one win lead in the standings. And then looking at the schedule, all of these teams are not playing each other, so it's going to be a reliance on a lot of everything else that's going on outside of the league. So I guess in a couple cases, the fate is in your own hands, and then in a couple others, you do need a little bit of help as well. Might have been nice to be able to bounce off some ideas off of other people on the pod, not gonna lie. Anyways, okay, let's get to the matchups. These are all matchups from week 3, our last rematches of the year. We will start with the matchups that do not matter. A Tale of Two Cities is taking on Dan Quixote. This is the Nick Bowl, Phronik, and myself. The last time we met up in week 3, this was the week the famed Juwan Jennings 40-point burger on the bench week, where I lost to Phronik 88-103. And then last week on the schedule, I put up 143. I beat Luke, and Phronik only put up 73.3. That is another smelly butt for Phronik, and he got whomped in the Medford Bowl, as Tim just kept putting up points, 157.3 for a week high score there. In this week's matchup, I am a slight favorite ahead of Phronik here. Looking at the injuries, looking at the byes, no Jonathan Taylor and no CJ Stroud for me, which means I am forced into starting Tua, so that solves my quarterback problem. Meanwhile, Phronik has a full roster. Well, I guess he's without Josh Downs, who is on bye. Tough year for Phronik. 5-8. He has lost, I believe is it 5 in a row? I was seeing on the app. Let's see here. Pull up another way to look things up. I don't know. It's two teams that are out of the playoffs. I've won 2 in a row. Yeah, Phronik's lost 5. I would be feeling a lot better if I had Jonathan Taylor going, but I do think Rico Dowdle has been perfectly fine as this week as an RB2, feeling pretty good about it. Would also like a little bit of clarity on the injury situation with Keon Coleman. Sounds like he probably won't play, or it's going to be questionable, but Devonta Smith will. Solves my problem of not having anybody in the 105-125 window to replace either of them in if some sort of injury were to come up. Let's see. Phronik mentioned he wanted somebody to roast me for not using my Baha Bucks on the 49ers running back Garendo. I guess that's fair. I do have the extra Baha Buck money. But to be honest, I completely forgot about waivers in our league. I didn't think there was anybody worth picking up. I had a pretty full roster to begin with. I don't know. There wasn't really anybody I thought about dropping or would make dropping a little bit easier or anything like that. So I just didn't make a move, and I just completely forgot about it. So I'm sitting there with the 63 Baha Bucks, which would have been enough if I put them all in, or more than Scott had put in for Garendo, and I think he's like sitting on his bench the last I looked.
I know a couple of people kind of threw their last dollars at it as well, and ended up not making a difference. So maybe hoping for, if Scott also doesn't think to do waivers, he ends up on Luke's team, and that certainly changes his fortunes, because I think he was the second highest bidder. Is that right? On the offer report from a couple days ago, if ESPN cooperates with me. Let's see, Wednesday. Looks like Andrew went in big at 45, and then Luke at 11. So everybody just kind of, threw their money in and made a move. And I just kind of forgot. Whatever. It's fine. I still like the team that I have going forward into the bracket. I'll have a tough one against Jordan in week one, and then take on, Fronik again, maybe in the next round of points. So we'll just kind of see how that goes. Feeling fine about my team. Fronik's team, little worried that the Tyler Lockett game kind of hasn't happened. Feels like he's due for a big one. That Arizona-Seattle game will either be super weird in high scoring or super weird in low scoring. I never know what to expect with the NFC West games. That are kind of left on their own. Not worried about Brooks or Bigsby. And the Cowboys defense against Cincinnati is certainly a decision. I don't know. I guess it'll come down to Monday night watching the Simpsons cast of the Bengals defense or Bengals offense against the Cowboys defense, which hasn't been very good for a couple weeks in a row now here. And just kind of, feasted on Tommy DeVito, I guess, if you're trying to build momentum off of that. And then CeeDee Lamb is questionable as well. Looks like he did not practice today. So that will be very interesting. I guess that explains Fronik's pickup of Brandon Cooks. So we'll see how that goes. I'm going to pick myself in this one. I don't think it's going to be close. I think Fronik loses another one. His team has been on quite the decline, a slow burn here to lose five in a row. So a little tough, but I don't know. Welcome to the constipation bracket and the toilet bowl here as we move our way along. Let's go next match up based on the standings here. Trying to pick a good one. I didn't look at any. Here's another one that doesn't really matter. No points scored in this one. Kittle House on the Prairie. Luke 5-8 eliminated from the playoffs. And Kaskino Roy Allen, Andrew 10-3 locked in with a bye. Looking at the bye weeks. No Commanders, no Ravens defense for Luke. And on Andrew's side, he does lose Christian McCaffrey to IR, who has been dropped, and J.K. Dobbins, who was placed on IR as well. So he will be back. Let's see. It misses 4 weeks. 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll be back for the championship game if he is healthy enough to come back. So that will be Andrew holding on to a prayer of if he needs J.K. Dobbins and counting on a Charger in a championship matchup for Andrew, I'm sure is something that he would love to rely on. That said, Patrick Mahomes kind of turned things up a little bit, gets against the Chargers on Sunday night. Alvin Kamara, probably going to get even more targets here. Just kind of been a PPR machine in the way the Saints offense runs now. George Pickens has been great. JSN has been great. Mooney's a fine wide receiver 3. The pickup of Jonnu Smith has been good as well. So Andrew's team, despite all its woes, still projected 111. And then looking over at Luke's side, he is off the 3 tight end train because Taysom Hill has been ruled out. So he does have to go to Parker Washington, who's a real guy I just learned about. That's very interesting. And then, fun one in this one, Justin Herbert against Patrick Mahomes in real life and in fantasy. That'll be a fun Sunday night matchup for those two. Looks like Luke's team, I think, is in a pretty good place. Bears offense looked a little bit better last week, even though, and now Eberflus is gone, so who knows what it's going to look like. I think the offense did kind of improve after they fired that offensive coordinator, so maybe things are starting to turn around there. And then Mike Evans came back, which was very important as well for Luke. 118 yards and a touchdown in his second game back from being on IR. Yeah, pretty good team. Kind of a know-nothing matchup. Wouldn't be surprised to see Luke maybe pull an upset off here just because Andrew's team has been pretty low scoring on the season, and Luke's has been a little bit better. So let's take Luke in a know-nothing meaning matchup to get by there. Why not, huh? Another matchup. I'm trying to see which one's here. See, now we're getting into the mess. We've done two matchups, and the other four have all of the four playoff teams that are in them. Let's see. In terms of importance, here's one that doesn't mean much either. Tim is locked into the playoffs, and Moby Ditka is taking on Mike, and Sulliver's Travels at 7-6. We talked about Mike is a 99% chance going to get into the playoffs just because on points scored, he is the highest scoring team in the league. Never want to say 100% because I guess somebody could score 400 and maybe Mike decides that he's heard from the computers and the analytics that he's got 100% chance to make the playoffs and he just sits everybody and we all catch him in points scored. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. A lot of points in this one for Tim as he's got three guys going. Jordan Love, Jahmyr Gibbs, and Christian Watson. They have put up 32.94. So we're down to about a minute to go in the third quarter. To Mike has put up 6 points so far from Lamb Saporta, Pam Salorda, who has 6 points, four receptions, 40 yards. Looking at the benches here, big losses this week on bye for Tim. No Joe Mixon, no Scary Terry, who are both incredible players, very important parts of Tim's roster that have gotten him to 8-5 and to clinch the playoffs. And then looking over at Mike's side, no B. Robinson, Brian Robinson in this one, who is on bye as well. So when the player's still to go here, looks pretty okay. Looking at Jaylen Waddle, I've got him in another league. He had a big week against New England. Wasn't so great last week against Green Bay on Thursday night. But hey, long week off at home against the Jets. Potential there to have a big game. Feels like Miami maybe wants to have that big showing that their offense is, you know, kind of back and going to be able to do something. And then down at the bottom of Tim's roster, David Njoku, target machine, again, just kind of doesn't matter who's there in Cleveland. He's just such a big body that just kind of drops down and is always open or is good at the jump balls in the red zone. And then our guy, Bucky Irving, how good has he been? RB16 on the year, potential dark horse, like offensive rookie of the year. Probably not going to give it to a running back, especially with the seasons that Jane Daniels, Bo Nix, Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey have all had. So, but still, to have a guy who's taken as late in the draft as he was and wasn't guaranteed a spot, or I guess guaranteed playing time and in a weird backfield position, for him to have the weeks that he's had and be really consistent with his touches and carries has been really cool to see in all of the games except for the ones against the Falcons. But they don't play anymore, so it's fine. So we can root for Bucky. And they get the Raiders on Sunday morning. Oh, it's at home. Okay, that makes sense. Sure. So Tim's team fine. He's in the playoffs. Mike's team is fine. He's got Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley are taking on Carolina. I don't know, 3 weeks ago, you would have said that's an easy maybe 75 points between the two of them because Carolina is that bad. Carolina has done a lot better recently. Put the scare into the Chiefs. And then last week, did they win last week? Jeez, what a question, huh? Does this guy even know ball? NFL scores, I Google. Let's look at the previous week here. Come on, Google, do not let me down. Panthers. Oh, lost in overtime to Tampa Bay. So again, a good Tampa Bay team that's, you know, fighting for the division lead as the Falcons have fallen apart, took them into overtime. So that's, you know, two losses the last 2 weeks, one of them to an 11-1 team, the other to a division leader that, you know, should have walked over them, and you've lost by six both times. Panthers are putting together a good resume that, you know, should they be the 12th team in the playoff, I think is a lot of things that is one of the things that the committee's going to have to consider. Anyways, bad joke. Moving on. Mike's team as well, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who is, I guess, just Marquez Valdes-Scantling, just the three named guys who have four catches for anywhere. I guess we'll have a 0 to 4 catches for anywhere between 0 to 185 yards and 0 to 4 touchdowns. They're both the same player in two different offenses. They just run streaks, and their quarterback throws it down there. Sure. I mean, it's... if it works, it works, and you feel great. And then you have a 3 for 31 or a 2 for 10, a 1 for 9 game like NWI has had before, and they don't look so good. So we'll see. And then Brock Bowers, who we talked about, is doing great. Tight end one on the year, rookie of the year. And he also just has the hairstyle of a middle-aged man in Georgia who has just a really big property and loves the Bulldogs. That's exactly what Brock Bowers looks like. Other than that, yeah, just kind of a know-nothing matchup. Even with the big points so far, Packers are in the red zone. So if it is maybe a double up for Love to Watson, that would be big for Tim. I don't think he's super worried about it, though. Either way, we'll take Mike in a tight one. Maybe it comes down to Sunday night, Monday night. There's Aaron Jones into the end zone. Packers take the lead again. This is turning quite the second half here since we've started recording for this game. Who are the last guys? This is a big... DeAndre Hopkins on Sunday night is the only guy on Mike's team who isn't playing in the 10 o'clock window. And will be the last guy to go in this matchup. Debo Samuel and James Cook, both playing on the West Coast at 1:25, will be the last for Tim's team. So matchup between two teams wrapped up, locked into the playoffs. And Mike's done Sunday evening. Tim's done even before those games wrap up. So that's pretty interesting there. Let's see. Where do we want to go next? We will start bottom of the standings and moving up. We have Pip, who is the Burrow, and his team picture appears to be the Burrow from Harry Potter, I think is what he's going for there. Yeah, he's the Burrow, and then the Burrow, Joe Burrow. But I don't know if anybody watches the in-season Hard Knocks. But it's also a clip that's on social media and stuff too. But he bought one of the Batmobiles from the Dark Knight trilogy, which is a $3 million car and is not street legal, which is just an insane thing to think about, that you just have one, just a spare $3 million lying around, and then you're buying not just a car for that much money, but you're driving a car that you can't legally drive on the roads. Not sure what you do with a car like that. I'm imagining he would work something out where he can like drive it 30 feet into the parking lot for a game and then comes out, like he said, looking like Batman. Probably would be very cool. But anyways, just a wild thing. Very cool car if it has any of the cool gadgets and gizmos and things from the movie, or if you just got like a prop car and maybe it turns on, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Anyways, cool thing for Joe Burrow in the Burrow Pip, hoping the name change will help him get into the playoffs here. He is projected to win. He is up 14 to 3.1 over Brandon, given a 64% chance to win as of now. Pip is only missing Hunter Henry on bye, and then on Brandon's side, no Zay Flowers, Audric Estime, or Bo Nix. So Brandon's team a little bit thinner. Not getting a great game so far from Amon-Ra St. Brown. Just three receptions. Apparently it's a Pimtatrick game tonight. He's had a quite the game. So Amon-Ra struggling, but the Bears are going to be passing it a lot here. And I don't know, this game's got anywhere from 2 to 5 more touchdowns in it just by the way these two teams end up playing. So it's Matt Stafford against the Buffalo defense, and then Brandon's kind of talked about it as well last week, brought it up. Splitting time with Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt is probably not the situation that he's looking for, especially if there is a timeshare. I didn't watch any of the game last week against oh, that was the Friday afternoon game. That was a weird one. Kareem Hunt only got 7 carries and 2 receptions to Pacheco, who I'm guessing came back and maybe took a much stronger 7, but for 44 yards. So that still seems like it's a bit of a timeshare, which is going to hurt a little bit. In terms of who do you go with, is it really one or the other? So you do kind of have to play both. I guess with the buys this week, he probably would have played both anyways. And then for both teams as well, Trevor Lawrence showed up and then went full Tua, so that's going to hurt Evan Ingram and Brian Thomas's projections. Is it Drake May starting for Jacksonville? Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback. Yeah. Oh, Mac Jones, not Drake May. Drake May is out. The other white Patriots quarterback is the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, Mac Jones will be starting. So we'll see, I guess, how that goes against Tennessee, who I don't know. They're Tennessee. 2-10 and 3-9 in a otherwise pretty okay morning window. I would love to just never see that game pop up on the red zone. I just, anytime there's a scoring play, just put a little flash in the corner, Jaguars field goal, Titans field goal. That's it. You can just put a little alert in the bottom. Hey, yeah, Mac Jones threw a pick. Yeah, Will Levis threw a pick. I don't need to see it. I don't want to see any of it. The only thing is if, you know, a thick six, any touchdown that's over 99 yards, 98 yards and over. So it's got to be exactly 99 yards for a touchdown to be seen there. I don't want to see Hansen cutting to that game because it's a 3rd and 5 and a team takes a deep shot and it's incomplete. Because that's just what that whole game is going to be. Run, pass, incomplete. Punt, run, pass, incomplete, punt. I don't know, maybe a first down in there. I don't want to be involved with that game. It doesn't seem fun. I don't know, that's just kind of it, really. Pip is, like we said, outside looking in at the playoffs. He needs one. Really what he needs is for Duncan to lose because he has the points advantage on him already. And assuming Duncan isn't going to go off, which as of right now, well, he has no points. So you would like to be able to build that up. I should say Pip is up 15 to 3. David Montgomery is racking up some points now for the Lions offense. Pip is really going to be rooting for Jordan to continue being one of the highest scoring teams in the league and to beat up on a lower scoring team. Jordan, fourth highest scoring team in the league, and he's only got 4 wins. Absolutely screwed over by the schedule. Really unlucky. Would be a shame if he has to do a second punishment. Would just be just the shamiest. So that's what Pip's rooting for. I think he can't get the win. I guess we didn't really talk about Brandon's team. We talked about Pacheco. Najee's been fine. Marvin Harrison, bit of a dud. Ridley's in that Jaguars game, which I don't know. Maybe, no. It's going to be a bad game. Don't want to watch. Not going to be fun. I guess Calvin being on the Titans side is a little bit better than the Jags, but it's all still gross. Just going to go from there. I do think Pip wins. And kind of keeps his hopes up, and last to go for him will be his Bichuma Bengal stack. So needing all the points in that one against a Dallas team that has been struggling on defense, has been struggling on defense at home as well, one Thanksgiving New York Giants game aside. Next up, speaking of Duncan, we will go to his matchup. The Falk in our stars, Duncan at 7-6, is taking on Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Johnny U. Jordan, who is 4-9. In this one, Jordan is up 24-0, but he does have a 0 in his lineup from Jaden Reed. No points there tonight for the number 8 fantasy receiver on the season. He has 1 target. Not good. Taking on Duncan's team, no players going tonight, so no points on the board for him. In a tough spot to be needing a win to get into the playoffs when he does not have Lamar Jackson, quarterback 1 on the season, averaging nearly 25 points. It's an awful time to have a week 14 by, so it's Russell Wilson who moves into the starting spot, and then it's just kind of his big 3 after that, Kyren, Puka, and I guess you could say Devontae Adams. Travis Etienne has been quite the dud in Jacksonville, so that's not great. Devontae Adams is pretty up and down in the Jets offense, and then wow, it's a big game for Steelers for Duncan. Russell Wilson, Pat Freiermuth, and the Steelers defense all in that one. You know, Duncan's just going to be watching the Steelers and thinking about Super Bowl 40, his favorite memories as a Seahawks fan, of thinking about that game. Not to put the bad vibes out there. Duncan, I'm sorry. That's uncalled for. That was mean. Shouldn't have done that. You're fighting for the playoffs. I'm in dead last in the standings. Shouldn't be calling out and rooting against teams. You're missing a lot of guys on bye. Cortland Sutton also, who would be very important to have in your lineup, and really shitty and quite unfortunate to have those byes here. And now I'm taking shots about a Super Bowl from when you were like, I don't know, was it 8 or 9? My dad's a Seahawks fan. He's very mad. He's still mad about that game. So I don't know. Maybe you're lucky enough that you don't really remember what happened and can just blame the refs and move on. So I apologize. There is, wow, Pim Tatrick. A touchdown there for the Lions. So Duncan's doing the best he can. He's, awful time to have bye weeks like this at this time of the season. And then looking over at Jordan's side, no Javonte Williams, no Ramondre Stevenson, no Tank Dell. So that is all not great as well. I guess Dell's been kind of up and down, but Stevenson has, RB23 is pretty okay. He's a solid 10 points, which is, something that's nice to put into your lineup. Instead, Jordan gets to ride the Kyle Pitts train. Two Falcons for him there. Fronick dropped him after a zero reception, two target game. Frohnik dropped him Wednesday morning at 1:19 in the morning. Lord knows what Frohnik's doing at that time of day and what he's thinking and doing there, but sure, just move on from Kyle Pitts. I think it's a decision that pretty much everybody who's drafted Kyle Pitts in the league has thought about doing. I don't know if he's ever actually been dropped before, so yeah, very interesting little decision there from Frohnik. So he moves right into Jordan's lineup. Two Falcons in that one. Three players in that game with Justin Jefferson as well. Kirk Cousins revenge game. I don't know. I guess this is as good a time as any to for our favorite segment. Rick complains about the Falcons. Kirk Cousins has turned into a pumpkin. He's not good anymore. It's not October. He's really struggling. And it's not good. I think there were some pretty serious thoughts about moving to Penix. I didn't really read any articles this week about if they were going to do it or not. So we'll see. It sounds like they're just going to stick with Kirk and maybe just, I don't know, he can figure it out. But you would think after the bye week, defense played really well against the Chargers. And the difference is the game is Kirk throws four interceptions. One of them's a pick six. That's just a massive bummer. At home after a bye against a West Coast team traveling east, even though it's a thing really Harbaugh's really good at, that's a game that the defense said, please go win. We're going to play our best game. We're going to get us right back on track. And Kirk said, hold on, let me throw another interception. So we'll see. Maybe he's motivated by the homecoming of it all. Back in Minnesota, I don't know. I would like to see the Falcons defense play a little bit better, at least again. And they're at this point gonna need some help to win the division, because that big lead that they had has disappeared, and it's the Bucs are literally right on their heels. They're both 6-6. So the Falcons, only thing going for them is that they have a really good record in the division, but I don't know how, like, I guess it doesn't matter if you have less wins than a team ahead of you. So we'll see how that goes. Projections in this one, it's 108 to 104. Jordan's going to need some points out of Jaden Reed here. Packers should be passing the ball a little bit. They are down three. So just no targets for Reed, or one target tonight for Reed. So kind of need a little bit of something out of him, a rush, a catch would probably be nice, go a long way. So we'll see how that goes. I will, for picking this one, I think it's going to be, it's tough to pick here. It's either Jordan with too many Falcons or Duncan with too many Steelers. I'm going to go, Jordan. I think he's going to have the edge at quarterback with Brock. Well, I don't know. Russ has been fine. That's his quarterback 31. I guess he's only been starting for half the weeks. He's only got 2 weeks above 20 points. Yeah, I'm going to go with Jordan. He's got the edge at quarterback. And I would say an edge at wide receiver. But Jaden Reed's got the zero, so that's not helping. Last guys to go in this one will be for Duncan. He's got his Rams, Kyren and Puka. And then for Jordan, he's got Brock going at the 125. So this one will be wrapped up and done before Sunday night football. So Pip will know going into Sunday night how Duncan has done for the day, and we'll have some clarity going into the last matchup. So the Sunday night game is Chiefs Chargers Chiefs and then Bengals Cowboys. So I guess looking back to Pip's team, he doesn't have anybody. Sunday night he's got DK. Oh, DK's questionable. He's hid him down in his flex. Looks like for some roster maneuverability flexibility. I'm trying to do a thing. It didn't work. And DK got an update. Non-participant at Thursday's practice. So maybe that changes the math a little bit for Pip, but he does have a Dunze at the same time slot to be able to move him in if DK is out. But Pip will know basically what he needs out of Burrow and Chase to either get a win, or he'll know what Duncan has done going into Sunday night and then have all of Monday to think about it, about how playoffs are going to go. So that's an interesting little wrinkle, I should say. Next up, we have not yet talked about this matchup. Heath on the Nile. Jared is 7-6 versus East of Teton. That is Scott, who is 10-3. Scott, like I've said, wrapped up the bye, wrapped up not wrapped up the one seed. Does have playoffs and a bye wrapped up, though, so that's all set for him. And is the second highest scoring team in the league. So far in this matchup, Jared's got a slight lead as Tucker Kraft has that touchdown that we talked about earlier, and 41 other yards to go with it. And he has 11.6. And Scott, East of Teton, has 8.1 points from Jameson Williams. Scott is projected to win this one, as he has a lot of weeks this year. Looking at the byes, no TD Henry, no Micah Pittman, and no Justice Hill on bye. While looking at Jared's side, no Nico Collins, no Mark Andrews, Jaden Daniels, Noah Brown, or Alec Pierce. So a bye-mageddon going into the last week of the season, in a week where you pretty much want to win, well, need a win, to get into the playoffs, and need to hold off on points as well. The 22-point gap between Jared and Pip is going to be an interesting one to see how that kind of shakes out. Certainly with the way Pip's team has a lead right now, like he's already picked up 4 points as things are going. Will be really interesting to pay attention to outside of your own matchup for this season. Let's see. So Jared's team, without Jaden Daniels, goes to Will Levis in this disgusting Jaguars-Titans game that I've talked about. Cooper Kupp, Malik Nabers is good, but he's also questionable. And I should say that Jared does not have a defense, and so he is still only projected 110. So let's see. Oh, wow. I haven't talked about how anybody did in the previous matchups outside of Fronik and I's from week 3 and how everybody did the week before. Honestly, just forgot again. Like I've got the two screens going and I had a different screen up in front of me. And so it was on the semi-products reference and I just completely forgot about it. So last week, Mike won, he beat Jared. Tim won, beat Fronik, talked about that. Scott won last week, beat Pip 150 to 115. That 115 score from Pip would have been good enough to beat three other teams. Let's see. One, two, three, four other teams. So just, a very respectable score, but with a little schedule help, you know, he gets a win there, and then that's a whole other wrinkle into our playoff seedings. Andrew lost to Duncan with 91 points to Duncan's 136. So very high scoring week. Two teams get into 150, cleared the 150 barrier. Mike was a reception in 3 or 4 yards away from clearing it with a 149. I had 143. So certainly could have been a big week for some unfortunate scores or some losses there, but things kind of worked out. And then back in week 3, how things went, Mike beat Tim, 143-103. Jared beat Scott 137-113. Pip beat Brandon 125-86. Andrew beat Luke 124-71. And then Duncan beat Jordan 127-115. That was just kind of the start of Jordan realizing that he was just bad schedule luck with a 115, as he would have beaten, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams. So top half scoring matchup that week, and instead gets a loss. So that was everybody in week three. I just forgot about it. I'm sorry. Anyways, back to Jared's team here. Missing a lot of good players, so trying to fill in some spots, and then doesn't have a defense so far. Let's take a look at the waivers. See how things are looking here. I should say trade deadline is Friday? Tomorrow? I don't know if we're going to make any trades or anything. A lot of flags on the Packers as Jones gets into the end zone, but looks like that one's coming back. So Jared's options are the Saints or the Jets, the Bears, the Falcons, the Rams, the Giants, the Raiders, or the Panthers. In terms of projections, ESPN's projections, the Saints would be his best bet. They're on waivers. They clear Friday morning, so maybe that's who Jared's going for, considering he hasn't picked anyone up. Didn't pick up the Lions defense, which I think wouldn't have been able to. I think the Lions were dropped just earlier today, so that move might not have been... Oh, he dropped the Lions defense. Oh, that's very interesting. Interesting little play there, Jared. Let's see what's up here, what you got up your sleeve there. Other than that, Breece Hall, Devon Achane, Cooper Kupp, Malik Nabers, all pretty good. That's all set. And then on Scott's team, the 10-3 bye team here. Very solid. Yeshua Allen's very good. The drafting and holding on to Chase Brown worked out very well. Jerry Jeudy with a monster game last week. And then T. Higgins, a fun second option in that offense. The trade for Ladd McConkey went very well. And then Jamison Williams as a flex guy to get 8 points, you know, kind of near his projection mark, right about his average of 10. I mean, pretty fine there. Against kind of sounds like Packers, unless they go full Bears, will kick a field goal, tie the game. Lions are going to want to probably throw. So, I mean, a couple other catches going his way. Yeah, here go the Packers to kick a field goal here. So, yes, I mean, Jared's, like I was kind of getting to, I guess let's stay with Scott's team. Very good team, very strong. A roster that looks like this, even without TD Henry, I think would be pretty formidable in the playoffs. So to be able to add in RB2 on the season, to, you know, get a bye week this week, know nothing week from him next week, and then come back into the playoffs will be pretty interesting. And then he's got, Garendo as well. So, who came in 4 carries, 19 yards, a touchdown, maybe likely going to be the lead back, or at least a guy who's going to get a lot of touches in that Niners offense. So we'll kind of see how that goes. Scott, pretty solid team there, projected heavily for the win because Jared's playing with 9, something I'm assuming will change going forward by the time you listen to this. So let's see, picks. I don't know. Defensive options aren't great for Jared. I don't think it's going to make too big of a difference. The Will Levis play is whatever, but I think he's a little bit stronger running back through wide receivers, at least in terms of guys who are going to be getting the ball. Jeudy is a 1. Weird offense, AFC North game. I will go. This one's really tough. I'm going to go Scott in a very close one. Not going to say tight. We'll say close. I don't particularly know why. I'm just kind of, these are the vibes right now. It would add quite the wrinkle with Jared and Pip both being 7-7, and then it comes down to points scored, which is something I can't predict. Pip's got to make up that 20-point difference. Let me find out what the number is exactly here. Probably should have done this sooner. I've been saying like 20 the whole time. Let's see, 1,517.16 minus 1,495.06. So we're going to get a nice round number. Yeah, 22.1 points. So I think I picked Pip over Brandon. So here I will take Scott over Jared, and then we'll let points scored decide, come down to the end of it. In terms of last guys to go here, it will be, I guess, pending if he actually goes or not, will be Kamani Vidal for Jared in the Sunday night game, or potentially Cup and Shakir in the Sunday afternooner. And then over to Scott's side, he does have T. Higgins going on Monday, so he'll know what he needs or doesn't need out of him to get a win. Does he care? Who knows? It'll really just come down to Monday night. How many points ahead or behind Jared will Pip be? Of Jared will Pip be? And that will kind of decide things, essentially. It's going to be a very interesting battle. It's very close. 7-7 for Jared. Let's look at his records here. Yeah, went 7-7 last year. Missed the playoffs. So there's the potential that Jared misses the playoffs again at 7-7. And this time it would be just based on points scored. That would be quite brutal after the 5-8 era. And then now turning into the 7-7 era for Jared is not going to be fun. Not enjoyable at all. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Just want to make sure I covered all the matchups here. I'm pretty sure I did. If I just say them again, Phronik and Rick, Tim and Mike, Jared and Scott, Pip and Brandon, Luke and Andrew, Jordan and Duncan. Yeah, covered them all. So, I mean, that's it for me. This time next week will be the playoffs, will be the constipation bracket. We will know where the seedings are lined up, and oh boy, another fantasy season. It's just a couple weeks away from wrapping up here. So it's going to do it for me. Thanks for listening. Find me on Blue Sky mostly. I guess I still kind of use the semi-pro Twitter, but not really. Blue Sky's fine. It's coming around. I think, you know, get a couple more people on there and talk some fantasy stuff, or just see the other things people are skeeting about, and it's a good little time, I guess. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. Anyways, best of luck to all of you in your matchups this week, and talk to you real soon. Bye!